This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Today, conversation with Hartford Mayor Pedro Segarra. He's running to retain his job. He lost the endorsement of City Democrats to Luke Bronin. The mayor gathered the necessary signatures, though, to petition onto the primary ballot. Luke Bronin will be joining us on September 10th on the program. Primary election day is September 16th. Join our conversation, 860-275-7266. Comment on our website, wnpr.org/where we live. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. We'll be getting to more of your questions and calls for the mayor in just a bit. But first, Pedro Segarra, welcome back to the program. Thank you so much for coming in, Mayor.
Thank you for having me once again.
First of all, let me just ask you about the job of being mayor while you're running for re-election. We were just talking about this before you went on. How do you balance these two things?
More hours. I thought that you couldn't work more than 24 hours, but somehow I've come up with a system where you do that. My number one priority is continue to be mayor and make sure that I execute the oath that I took of being the mayor to the city. And given the critical challenges that we have, you almost don't have a choice. There's a lot of things that are going on currently that require my attention. So I just work my campaign schedule around it.
What are the critical challenges? Give me one or two.
Well, there's a lot of challenges in terms of dealing with the day-to-day operations of the city, making sure that we're on budget, making sure that that we continue to deliver the services that we need to do. We recently initiated a clean sweep operation. We've been gathering data for the last year just to make sure that we keep our neighborhoods as clean as possible. So we started that initiative, which requires owners to cooperate and bring out debris. We were having to address a issue with rodents, and we were trying to get rid of all the places where they can hide, which requires getting the public's cooperation and getting rid of a lot of unwanted trash. In addition to that, making sure that we respond to what was a national uptick in violence in many cities. Our city was not excluded from that. And that required us to regroup, reorganize. As recently as yesterday, we had a conversation with the initiative at the U.S. Department of Justice, and it is a data center. It's a resource center to help us sort out and gather data and also get some feedback in terms of what we can do to impact the issue of violence, not just in the city of Hartford, but collaborate with other cities to look into that issue.
In a bit, I want to get back to that because obviously that's one of the most important issues facing Hartford and many other cities in America. I want to get to a little bit of the politics of this off the start. And the first real question is, why is it that you're sitting across from me today not as the endorsed Democratic nominee in the city of Hartford?
Because I chose to do what was in my conscience. I am a person of conscience. I'm very deliberate. The process of the nomination was there's always politics in the process of nominations.
That's
right?
Why they call it politics.
Right?
Yes.
But there are things that are inherently unfair that deprive the public of the representation that through that political process they should be entitled to.
What do you mean?
Insider machine politics that really bear no relationship to the interest of the public and actually rob the public of their ability to insinuate themselves in terms of their needs, wants, and aspirations, because those are, after all, their representatives. The backroom dealing, the offering of patronage, the deals that were cut, the cutting off of some candidates from the process and not affording them an opportunity to engage members. It was just a lot. It's something that had started much earlier than the convention.
When you talk about patronage, give me a specific example. I mean, that's a very specific charge. What do you mean?
Let's go directly to my opponent's treasurer. The gentleman is very upset because he no longer has an investigation contract to the extent that he had before, and he's very upset, right? So the city council, with my consent and agreement, thought that a cost savings measure was to rebid a lot of the contracts that we had. And in the process, we were able to get vendors that were lower. So in the process, someone lost some money. This process is not about people, and it's not about people's personal interest. This process is about the people. And that's just to give you a small example. Yeah. There's more stuff that went on that was quite distasteful.
But last time around, you were the endorsed Democratic nominee, right?
That is correct. That is
so. So how could we read it as things being any different then when you got the nomination? Any of the same deals being made when you got the nomination as opposed to now when Luke Bronin gets the nomination?
I didn't offer anybody any jobs. It was a totally different leadership. I think people acknowledged that I came in at a very difficult time and did a very good job in quickly restoring balance, trust, transparency, and stabilizing the finances of the city at a very difficult and crucial time. So it's a very, very difficult situation. And also at that time, mm-hmm. and I'm going to be very frank about this, at that time, the city was not at the position that it is now in terms of its potential and having realized its potential. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more at stake now. The city is doing much better in terms of its development, in terms of attracting people to our city, in terms of attracting more people to want to live and be part of the city. Our city has undergone unprecedented change. And that opens up a market for people to come in who don't necessarily represent the interest of our city and want to sort of take over.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. And we're talking with Pedro Segar. He's the mayor of the city of Hartford, running for re-election. His challenger, Luke Bronin, will be on the show in a couple weeks. If you'd like to call us and ask questions, 860-275-7266. I mean, one of the things that you have said most vociferously in some of the debates that you've had, also on Face the State with Dennis House, we're going to be playing a couple of clips from your interview with my friend Dennis in just a moment. You keep talking about Luke Bronin not having the experience to be mayor, not having lived in the city long enough. But at the same time, I think one of the things that Hartford has been trying to do and you've been trying to do as mayor is bring in people from the outside. I mean, we've heard for years about the need to have young, professional, interesting people living downtown, vibrancy, feet on the street. People want to invest in the community. And it seems like a lot of what you're saying about your challenger is he hasn't been here long enough. He's an outsider. He doesn't really have their interests in mind. So how do you reconcile those two things?
You know, there's a difference between having people come into a city and invite people to come into the city. But there's another difference. It's very different to give someone that's a recent arrival to the city the number one spot of leadership for that city.
But shouldn't they get involved in politics? I mean, don't you want people – you don't want people to just come in here and not be involved. I mean, maybe they should want to do something, change something.
Absolutely. But one needs to look also at motivation and what is the motivation. And when you look at my opponent's support and where it's coming from, you start to see that that is not – the support is not really rooted in the city. For example, the very embarrassing situation where he has now, where he was stripped of the Hartford Federation of Teachers endorsement. Yes. Why? Because you cannot play both ends. You cannot take top dollars from the charter schools, executives, and seek to portray their interests, and then at the same time go to the union and say that you're going to protect their interests who are so pro-anti-charter. You can't have it both ways. And what I purport to you is that the motivations behind this candidate in wanting this job is not because he represents the best interests of the residents of this city, whether they be here a month or 50 years, is because he has his own personal agenda, and his own interests that are not really tied into the best interests of the people of this city.
Is it beyond your purview a bit to assign motivations to others, to say you know what their motivations are for wanting to run for office?
Absolutely.
No, I'm asking you, is it outside your ability to comment on that? I mean, I don't know that you would want anyone to say what your motivations for your job, for wanting to be mayor is. I guess I'm wondering why you feel you know what Luke Bronin's motivations are.
Because when he – first of all, it's, you know, the issue of experience and the issue of motivation and the issue of why he wants to be mayor, and as articulated and as expressed, when he was at the governor's office, okay, I don't think that there was anything really tangible that he did using that position and that power that was in the favor of our city, whether it's budget cuts – whether it's the reentry population that's coming out from prisons without us having adequate supports to deal with those challenges, whether it's Latino children from Central or South America looking for a place in our city, which you basically, you know, didn't intervene to any extent. So he basically didn't do much while he was in that job to really, really help our city, number one. Outside of that job, very little contributions to the city in terms of active participation. Most of his effort that he expended in our community, and most of the effort actually that he expended while he was at the governor's office, was expended on lining himself up for a mayoral run, not in terms of actually contributing anything significant to our community that would really make him appreciated in terms of what he had donated to our city or produced for our city. So that's what I'm talking about. And even the residency and the tenure, it's very, very, very spotty. I mean, he says he comes in 2006, falls in love with the city, wants to raise a family here. But you know, several years later, he goes to Washington, D.C. and buys $1.5 million home in Washington, D.C. that he basically didn't sell until it was time to head back to Hartford.
His wife, Sarah Bronin, is heads up the Planning and Zoning Commission.
Yes.
Another accomplished person who's lived in Hartford about as long as he is. How did she get on Planning and Zoning?
Very simple. I contacted the University of Connecticut asking for folks from the University of Connecticut that might be interested in joining the Parking Authority. A response got back to me that she preferred to be on the zoning board. I explored it. It was not disclosed to me that her husband was already, I think by that time, planning a mayoral run. So did not enter into the equation. And I thought that she was a competent person to sit on the board. It was later that she expressed wanting to share it as opposed to being a member. And again, it was not disclosed to me that her husband had intentions of running for mayor.
I guess to that point, here's someone who has come from the outside, who has the same tenure of living in the city as her husband does, who wants to invest in the city, and you've appointed her to this position.
Right. I've done this with many other people.
I don't necessarily need to agree with someone to appoint them to a board. But I guess my question is, if she is qualified and her tenure and her desire to help the city of Hartford qualifies her to sit on this very important commission. I mean, look, at the end of the day, planning and zoning in a city like Hartford, where planning is such an important part of what you all have to do. If she's got enough experience, why doesn't he have enough experience?
I have more experience. I have more of a connection. I have 40 years working in this community. I have a record to show whether it's increased graduation rates, whether it's increased investments and developments in our city, whether it's increased housing activity in the downtown area and other areas of the city, whether it's working with the Hartford Housing Authority to redevelop Bowles Park, Nelson Court, and Westbrook Village, whether it's 5 progressive years of significant reductions in crime. Even when you include the current upswing, overall crime is down during my whole entire tenure. Whether it's good relationships with the community and having an ability to express myself and communicate, whether it's in Spanish, in English, Portuguese, I do my best to connect and work with the community. I have a very strong connection with this community. Okay? So you know, everyone over 18 who follows the necessary paperwork is eligible to be mayor. I'm talking about an issue of experience. My experience versus his experience, there is no comparison.
I want to get to something that you said during a candidates forum earlier this year. It's about some of the challenges that the communities of color that make up most of the city of Hartford, some of the challenges they face. Let's listen.
Our challenge is how we as communities of color maintain the political power that we have and that we don't yield it over to suburbanites.
And you say there again, it's the tape is a little bad because it's in a big room, but it says that we don't yield it over to suburbanites. What were you saying there? What did you mean?
Politics, powers, is about representation, okay? I think that I'm a much better representative collectively of this city than is my opponent. I understand Puerto Rican culture and Latin American cultures. I understand the African American cultures. I lived in a community that's been diverse. As a candidate, I'm much more experienced and much more able to deal with the different communities that are encompassed in this city. So therefore, I believe that someone like myself, who has that connection, who has been in this city for this period of time, dealing with groups, all different groups, is much better able to have someone that was basically raised in Greenwich, who went to the elementary school, wherever that he went, that Jeff Bush went to, and then over to some other boarding school. I mean, even in his own office as the lieutenant, as the governor's counsel, I don't believe that there was either an African-American or a Latino that worked in that office. Even in his current law practice, there's not a Latino in that law practice, over 100 lawyers. So how are you going to be able to interpret, analyze, intervene, work with, support communities of color when you simply do not have that experience.
I don't know if you saw this. This came out recently. The magazine Wired did a really interesting interactive map of the racial makeup of America, essentially. And it had dots representing each individual all across the country. And so you could see some very clear patterns, you know, where communities are more African-American, more Latino, more white. And if you look and you zoom in on the city of Hartford, you actually see a city in which north of the I-84 corridor, most of the residents are African-American. And south of the I-84 corridor, most of the residents are Latino. And to the west part of the city, most of the residents, or a large percentage of the residents, are white. So a couple of things about that. One is that's nothing new to any of us. You've been here for a long time. I've been here for a long time. We know that. But I guess I wonder, do we make too much of race in the city of Hartford when we talk about politics? Or might it be better to think about this in terms of whoever the mayor is, trying to unify these places that have been so divided for such a long time into one city that maybe works better together?
Absolutely. This should be one city that works better together. So it is a very dangerous thing when you have someone that's fairly new to our community that says that this is about race when this is not about race. This is about qualifications and experience.
Did he say it was about race?
Well, I think the insinuations from the campaign is that I'm making race the issue. And this is about experience. This is about experience.
But you have been – I mean, you have been talking about, you know, your experience within the Latino community, having a voice of the people of the city of Hartford. A lot of what you've said, Mayor, honestly sounds an awful lot like you have been talking about people of color wanting to retain the political power that they've gained over many, many years, which I understand why you're saying it, but it does sound like what you're saying during your campaign.
It's personal to me. I am the candidate.
I have you.
Okay? Yeah. And I'm making an argument that I have the cultural competencies, the connections, all the things that are required in order to have a better fit and a better connection as a representative of the people. You know, there's been other races in which gubernatorial races in which you have Italians, right, which are described as Europeans, voting for DeStefano, and you had Irish voting for Malloy. Mm-hmm. There's always going to be that degree of allegiance, right, nationalistic allegiance. But in my case, I put it more within the context of a candidate and a mayor's ability to be able to relate, to be able to connect, to be able to understand. I have a master's in social work with a specialty in community organization and Puerto Rican studies, okay? So the fact that I have that experience and that credential makes me much better able to relate. Whether I was white or black, it makes me much better prepared, much better able. My years of experience as a psychotherapist, as a social worker, as an attorney, as corporation counsel, as a council member, as a council president, all those experiences collectively make me a much better person. The fact that I happen to be Puerto Rican may give me an additional advantage in terms of understanding and relating to the Puerto Rican community. It doesn't exclusively qualify me, but overall, in terms of total experience, I think I'm a much better candidate.
I want to get to some phone calls at 860-275-7266 for the mayor of the city of Hartford, Pedro Segarra, who's running for re-election. Tony is calling from Hartford. Hello, Tony.
Hey, Tony. How you doing? I mean, how's it going?
Good, good. What's on your mind, Tony?
I just had a question for the mayor. You know, your chief operating officer on August 7th promised to meet, residents in the city's north end who have been displaced from a fire, and he continues to refuse a meeting. I would like to ask the mayor, how would you address this issue and having your, chief operating officer, respond to, these questions and concerns for these
Absolutely.
Residents that they've had?
Yes.
Tony, thank you.
Yes. This relates to several number of families that were displaced in the Vine Street fire, as well as another fire that occurred on Franklin and several other families. I believe we have a total of 45 families. When I heard that there were issues with some of the families that very same day, I went to the hotel to meet with the families to get a sense of what were their needs. And, of course, one of their needs is immediate housing rather than to be at a hotel, as well as assistance with a host of other issues. And I had the conversation. I sent the chief operating officer to the meeting to meet with the residents. The manner in which the meeting was structured was very unique. He can only answer yes or no. His responses were limited to, I believe, 1 minute to each question. He couldn't deviate from the time that was allotted to him. It was a very, very unique sort of a meeting. And I think the chief operating officer doesn't have any problems in meeting with the groups or the representatives or actually the residents. But I don't think he wants to be confined in a meeting where if he gives a more descriptive description than yes or than no, he can't go beyond that. I don't think it's a good way, a good forum to really advance the interest of the community or the residents, because the residents do want a fuller conversation about their issues.
Well, when we come back, we'll actually talk more about having a fuller conversation with residents about things that are going on in the city. And there's a lot of questions to get to, including some from you at 860-275-7266. As always, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. It's part of our Where We Vote series. Mayor Pedro Segar is here answering your questions on Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Today we're talking with Mayor Pedro Segar. He's the mayor of the city of Hartford. He's running for re-election. Luke Bronin, who is his challenger and the endorsed Democratic candidate, will be joining us in the program on September 10th, primary election day in Connecticut is September 16th. If you're interested in some of the conversations the Colin McEnroe Show has been having with candidates for Bridgeport mayor, you can go to our website, WNPR.org, and search on the Colin McEnroe Show. Mayor Segar, before our break, you were talking a bit about a meeting that someone had called about. Your chief operating officer meeting with some people in the city of Hartford. It got me to one of the things I wanted to talk about. One of the criticisms of your administration over the course of the last couple of years has been that an awful lot of things are done behind closed doors. We found out about months of negotiations between you and the owners of the New Britain Rockettes when essentially you came out and said, we got a deal for a new baseball stadium in Hartford. And everyone said, what deal? When we tried to find information about some of the meetings that were happening afterward, some of those meetings were closed. And just to be honest, our Jeff Cohen, who covers Hartford for us, has been in a few of Freedom of Information Act fights to try to get information about some of those meetings. We recently met with your chief of police who talked a little bit about him wanting to talk to us in a forum that didn't necessarily have some other community organizers there because – you know, he didn't want to engage in some of those conversations in the public. There's a lot of meetings behind closed doors. So this has come up over and over again. And so I guess I'm just wondering if you can address those concerns and talk about why you believe some business that some people think should be public business should happen behind closed doors.
You know, I'm almost of the opinion that all public business should be done in public. Oftentimes that decision is not entirely up to me. If you have a business person that wants to come in and bring investment to the city, but sets a limit that until we have a term sheet in terms of what we're proposing and we're clear on what we can agree on, we don't move to the next step, then it makes it quite challenging. And I don't think that all government missed this because of the limitations that are imposed by sort of external influences are always done publicly. Same thing with the police department in terms of protecting the rights of victims, the images of victims. So while I have a preference for everything just to be done in an open, I mean, if the team would have approached and says we could do all these in the open rather than demand that some conversations happen confidentially while there was a term sheet, then that changes the dynamics, especially when you're trying to attract investments to the city. And we're talking about the largest economic development deal in the state and one of the largest in the city's history, which is meant to increase the number of jobs and vibrancy and well-being of the city. So there's always that tension that's exerted externally, not necessarily coming from me. My preference is that everything be done just in the open.
Looking back at the way the ballpark deal has been done over these many months, Do you wish that you'd done something differently as far as made it more public? Because honestly, now that it is rolling along, the biggest criticism your administration has faced has been about the method with which this is being done. Do you wish you could turn back the clock and say, I would like a more public process?
I would have liked a better timeline in terms of how it was unfunded. There could have been some opportunity to have a discussion, confidential discussions with the team in order to keep the options going, but then have a much better timeline in terms of how you deploy it. The done deal thing came in response to a question that was asked as to whether the team was actually looking to leave New Britain, and there was some controversy whether they were leaving or not, because there was a New Britain mayor basically saying that they had told her that they were not leaving. And when I was asked, you know, whether the team had decided to leave, whether it's a done deal, I said it's a done deal with respect to the team's decision to want to leave New Britain. And I don't think the Major League Baseball was in agreement that they would sign a new lease in New Britain. So I mean, the things were even off the hands, I think, of the team owners. And once you get to that threshold, they definitely were going to leave. But I think just the timeline for deployment, I learned a little bit about that. Also what you also weigh in these things, that you're looking at a sea of parking lots that went undeveloped for 40 years. And at what point do you continue to hold the people and this vast pieces of land hostage to have a process? Once the proposal was on the table as a proposal, subject to council approval, subject to redevelopment approval, subject to zoning approval, subject to all the different approvals, I think we had a fairly large, intensive process of meetings and public participation. So public participation was not robbed, because all these approvals needed to be obtained from all these different agencies after multiple hearings.
So in this development, and there's a lot of questions about, because the ballpark development really stands as one of the biggest parts of your tenure so far, and whether you're elected or reelected or not, the next mayor will be dealing with the fact that a baseball team is coming to the north end of Hartford, and there's going to be development around it. So a few things. We've heard varying reports about the status of the Hooker Brewery, which was a part of the anchor development there. It was going to bring a microbrewery that is part of, you know, central Connecticut to downtown Hartford to be a part of that. Where does that stand right now? Where does the supermarket development stand right now? Where do all the developments stand that are supposed to come up around this ballpark that's going to be open next April?
So when the plan was proposed, we had timelines for when Parcel A would be developed, when Parcel B would be developed, Parcel C, so on and so on and so on. So the next phase will be over by the supermarket and the buildings. They have been before CRDA for support with regards to the housing. And I expect that we will be on schedule in terms of that second phase moving forward. The supermarket component is a very critical component. You're already starting to see a lot of the residential units opening up in downtown. You also have a big community in the North End that needs access to a quality, affordable sort of supermarket model. So that is on schedule, as I understand it to be. The Hooker Brewery has is one of those concepts that gets developed a little bit later, and they're up also for assistance from the State Department of Economic Development. So they need some assistance, and they've been making requests, and we need to continue to work in order to make these pro formas work. I mean, look, we're doing a lot of growth and development in the city in addition to this. We have the old Hartford Office Supply, which we're looking to have a closing very soon. And we've made substantial investments in that. We're working with Coltsville. We've made a substantial investment in that. So I think that this administration has shown very clearly that we can get things done. Let's just keep our fingers crossed that other people with other motives don't get in the way of blocking things that should happen and must happen for the benefit and the progress of this city. And that's where it gets a little bit more complicated.
When it comes to the money necessary for these projects, at the time that you proposed the ballpark development, and this was going to be done at one point with taxpayer money, it was going to be done without taxpayer money, the state has never really been part of this development, right?
No, the state was approached before the development was even announced, and you know, there was an election going on at that time, and I think that the governor's decision was to sort of stay out of it. And
I didn't know that. So you took it to the governor before we knew about the ballpark plan?
During that period of time, I don't know, just around that period of time, it was presented in terms of this is what we want to do. We would like to get some state support.
Okay. See, what I had heard from the state was that they hadn't been approached at all by the city of Hartford.
There was an election going on at that time.
Okay. Do you think that you have the necessary connections to this administration and the governor's office and to legislators at the state capitol to get the funding, whether or not it's not for a project like this, but for Hartford? Because Hartford, obviously, it's going to need help with development projects. It's going to need help with policing. Do you think that you're able to make those connections and get that money for the city?
We've been working collaborative with the state. CRDA and all of these developments would not have been able to happen if it was not for the collaboration of the city working with the state and with CERTA. We've been incredible partners to do that. We've been incredible partners in transportation in terms of getting the busway done and street closures and all the different things that we've had to do to make that work. We've been incredible partners with Coltsville and the schools. So there's always been a good level of cooperation. I'm looking for that level of cooperation to actually increase by exploring some of the structural issues that really prevent us from really reaching our maximum potential. That being, how do we get the pilot or in its place establish a different system of municipal funding or municipal cooperation that gets us to meet our expectations and grow our city, grow jobs, how to work with the state to help the state to the extent that we can so that we don't have businesses leaving our state, that we are actually in a position to recruit businesses into our state. So I think, yeah, it's very, very important, very necessary, and I'm looking forward to growing that and strengthening that.
We're talking with Mayor Pedro Segarra of the city of Hartford, who's running for reelection. You mentioned earlier crime in the city, which is, of course, is a big issue. You recently talked to my friend Dennis House on Channel 3 on his program Face the State. Let's listen to a little bit of that conversation.
I think that the governor should understand that the Hartford issue with regards to homicide is just not a Hartford issue. That, number one, it is an issue that it's in many cities across the United States. We recently had a conversation amongst the mayors. There's many cities that have increased their police coverage and staffing levels. Many cities that have programs similar to ours, Project Longevity, Focus Deterrence, many of the problems that we have, Peace Builders, et cetera. And many of these cities still see an increase in homicides and shooting. This is something that's going on in many cities throughout the nation.
This is something that that my colleague Colin McEnroe wrote about in the Hartford Courant, that there are a number of cities across the nation that are seeing this increase in violence. But I think for the people of the city of Hartford, they're probably saying, well, yes, that's true, but we have very specific issues here ourselves. When your police chief was in recently on my program, he talked about elements coming in from outside the city who are creating some of the problems. So I guess a couple-part question here. But first, how much of the violence in the city of Hartford right now, the uptick that we've seen this year, can truly be attributed to some sort of a national wave, and how much of it has specifically to do with things that we know about happening in and around the city of Hartford?
So yesterday we had a very detailed conversation with the U.S. Department of Justice. There is a unit that has been established to help cities such as ours to decipher and make sense of this world of increased violence in cities. And what we try to do is give a very clear picture of our city in terms of its demographics and the challenges that we've had in terms of the homicides and sort of break down the homicides in terms of how many were domestics, how many were tied to drugs, how many were tied to just interpersonal violence that were disconnected from drugs or anything else. And there is a connection between Hartford and other cities in terms of some of the same challenges. Hartford and the state of Connecticut are not dissimilar from other states that have chosen to deinstitutionalize as a way of making state budgets work. So as we study the homicides, more particular, you know, the last homicide we had of Miss Jackson, Miss Jackson's aggressor was a person who had been jailed for very serious assaults and even a homicide of another young woman. So the question becomes, to what extent has our criminal justice system has failed cities such as Hartford in basically not doing the best job that it could have done to protect these future victims of violence? That is a real question.
Well, but maybe you can talk that through a little bit more, because something we've talked about on the program a lot is Governor Malloy's what he calls a Second Chance Society, Second Chance Initiative, which would change some of the laws around possession of drugs. It would change some of the sentencing laws. One way to look at the change in the criminal justice system is, as you said, deinstitutionalization, states trying to save money by kicking people out of prison. Another way to look at it is we don't want as many people in prison because that doesn't serve anybody. I mean, people from your city going into prison time and time again for low-level offenses, it doesn't make anything better. So I mean, do those two things work together in your mind? Are you saying that the state isn't doing a good enough job of keeping people in prison? I just want to understand better.
No. I have been a proponent of second chance for decades. Yeah. Right? Rather than taking people who have substance abuse or psychiatric issues, rather than jailing them, to provide them with the resources in terms of getting the counseling, et cetera, that you need in order to be able to progress into a better place, not just storing them away in jails. That doesn't work. So I've been a supporter of second chance. Second chance, however, is a lot more limited in scope than is our total issue of crime. That's a very specific program that seeks to address specific goals. If you notice, the homicides that we've been having, both the victims and the aggressors, are older and have a lot of familiarity with the criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. My argument and my position is that we need to work a lot better with the state to make sure that before a person comes into our community that has a very serious issue of having long violent records, that those people are just not let out of jail and dropped into our streets or our shelters, but that we have a much better coordinated plan for those individuals. So that's the sort of work that we're doing now through our efforts in terms of finding out who are the folks, what is their backgrounds, what supports they need. But ultimately, we're going to have to work with the state, because on our own, we do not have the resources at the municipal level to be able to provide the quality of opportunities that are needed in terms of monitoring and serving this population.
When we're talking about the problems that are coming in from outside the city, something that your police chief talked to me about, I guess I'm wondering how you're working with surrounding communities. Because if indeed there are people coming in from Windsor or Bloomfield or any surrounding town to Hartford and causing chaos and, you know, shooting guns, it seems as though you need to work very closely with these surrounding communities. How are you doing that specifically?
Very specifically, the shooting task force was very effective at doing that, because we had representation from the other towns and from the state, from probation and from parole, in order to do a much better job at identifying. This is a very small portion of people that are committing these violent acts. So if you spend more time and put more resources in terms of studying this population, tracking this population, serving this population, you have much better chances of doing that. As the program became more and more successful, the resources were pulled away from the shooting task force, both from the state and other jurisdictions. So when we got this spike in violence, we had to quickly regroup and reorganize to get the resources and the efforts back in, at the same time that we increased the staffing levels through overtime to make sure that all of the routes and everything that needed to be police was police. Now, the unfortunate thing about this is that my opponent has totally misrepresented the issue of crime and violence in the city. He has not made those connections. He's just pretty much been banging out one-liners, either from headlines or his own thinking, that totally misrepresents the issue of violence in that city. Worse than that, he has chosen to politicize the lives of these folks.
Could you just give me a specific misrepresentation?
Oh, my God. He had a meeting, a community meeting, so-called community meeting, which I think was more political forum for himself, and where he were on the issue of violence in the city. And I think that that's unconscionable that one would use the deaths of the people who are dying in our city in order to promote that, when the record overall shows that even this year,
But how would he gather? How would one gather information if not to have a community meeting? I mean, if it's indeed a problem in our city, which I think you and I will agree it is, how does one gather information if not to gather people together in an open forum and talk?
It wasn't an open forum to talk. It was meant as a political meeting. He started the meeting by saying this is not a political meeting. But anytime that you start a meeting saying this is not a political meeting, it's an eye opener, right? Mostly filled with supporters, right? Mostly filled with supporters. And not really, you know, we've had meetings. I mean, we've had meetings, you know, I've had meetings on the issue of jobs. I've had meetings on the issue of the promise zones. We've had several meetings. We've had meetings on a lot of a host of different issues on the stadium. We had community forums on the issue of jobs and the benefits of having downtown North development. So it's not like I've not had meetings. I think even at that meeting, the few people that did come said that they disagreed with some of his assumptions. Number one, that having more police officers necessarily resolves the situation. There's no connection that has been made yet between a low number of police officers and an increase of homicides. That connection has not been made. Number two, the allegation that I've cut support for public safety when overall, if you look at our budgets year over year, there's been increased support for public safety. So there's a lot of misstatements that are being played out to take advantage of the fact that there was an uptick in violence and draw fingers and draw connections between that uptick in homicides and decisions that were made in my administration that don't necessarily correlate.
We have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to go through a lightning round, a lot more to talk about with Pedro Segarra. He's the mayor of the city of Hartford. He's running for re-election, primary coming up on September 16th. We'll get to a phone call coming up in just a moment, and we'll hear from you. 860-275-7266. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up on tomorrow's program, we're going to be talking about the high cost of rents across Connecticut, not enough rental properties available, which has driven up the cost in many parts of our state. That's our conversation tomorrow. Hope you can join us today. Mayor Pedro Segarra of the city of Hartford, he's running for re-election. We're taking questions. Let's go to Michael, who's calling from the city of Hartford. Hi there, Michael. Go ahead.
Yes, this is Michael Downs. I live at 74 Rosemont Street in Hartford. I'm a union leader in the city. And I just was wondering, I'm honored to speak with you, Mayor, and I just wanted to know what your position is on the untenable movement from health insurance to health savings accounts and the equally defenseless movement from pensions to 403Bs and 401Ks.
Michael, thank you for your questions.
You know, this is... I can tell you what we've done on the city side under my leadership, and that is that these workers have been promised a pension. Their health benefits that are due to these workers, we should honor the service of our workers through pensions that have been promised, that have served as inducement for them to continue in our employment for years. And obviously health benefits, good health benefits, are not a luxury. But we have been able to work to reduce the cost of medical plans either by working with the state as we did in the prescription plan and now as we're doing with the health plans. The bottom line is not to reduce the benefit but to seek economies that make those benefits less costly. So you start from the premise that you have a bundle of goods and you try to make savings without reducing the benefits to the individual because those have been bargained for. And, you know, when it comes to health benefits, it's not a luxury. It's something that's very important
for individuals. So, I mean, and I apologize for cutting in just because we have so little time left. But to that issue, I mean, obviously every city like yours has budget problems every year. I mean, you've had to sell off parking assets in order to raise money. I mean, do you have the ability to actually have a balanced budget that doesn't rely on one-time revenues or cutting benefits to people who've been working for the city? I mean, what's the solution long-term here?
The solution long-term is to work with your unions, work with your workers to reach agreement and not to try to just do it unilaterally in a way that is unjust to the workers. We've been able to work with the fire department and other departments. We have a cost containment committee. We've been working very well with the fire department, for example, and the police department to be able to figure out ways that without changing the benefit, we can lower the cost of those benefits. In the fire department alone, I think we're saving like $3 million over a two-year period of time.
There's a lot of questions coming in, and I don't have time for all of them. One I can kind of paraphrase. I wanted to ask you anyway. We've heard from a lot of people in parts of the north end of Hartford, very impoverished neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. One young man said to me, look, it's fine that there's a ballpark going up, but nobody I know can go to a baseball stadium. Mm-hmm. I really need help getting a job and doing something for my community. And he feels a disconnection from the city, from the rest of the city, from what's happening downtown. How do you make that connection for the most impoverished people of the city of Hartford, the people who really need the help the most?
So the downtown area is the financial center of our city, and it's the job center of our city. And my theory was that if we had that butt ugly building that was basically a do not enter into the north end sign, knocked down, and actually developed that property, that we would have a better connection with the northern part of the city. It's just not the stadium, which, by the way, is low cost, affordable family entertainment. It's not, you know, you're not going to the New York Yankees, you're not going to the Red Sox. They're not $100 tickets. They're $8, $9, $10, $11 tickets. That helps our youth. It helps our communities. It's 1,881 jobs at the peak of construction. So you're adding jobs to the base. But more importantly, this is not just about the stadium. This is about bringing economic development to once was a sea of parking lots.
And will this mean jobs specifically for people in the north end of Hartford? Or is there a way to make sure that happens?
Absolutely. And then we have a community benefits agreement with the stadium in terms of making sure that a certain number of jobs, I believe 30%, go to Hartford residents, as well as minority businesses. So there are protections in that contract, and we'll continue to do that as we move along with other developments. But in the North End also, we're spending $100 million to rebuild Weaver High School. We're spending $68 billion to rebuild Martin Luther King School. We're putting $4 million into the Clark Street School. We've put $12 million into Kinney Park. You know, there's a lot of investment that's going on, and this will also create jobs and educational opportunities.
You mentioned Clark School. This is a school that's been shut down because of the presence of PCBs in the school. Right. When does Clark School reopen?
I believe it's set to open the next academic year. We're trying to get it done by spring of this year, but obviously the priority is to get rid of the contamination. That's primary. So we're just trying to get that school up and running again. And also in the North End, one of the things that my administration accomplished by working with partners is to establish a promise zone, which has been significant in other cities in terms of leveraging and bringing millions and millions of dollars in grants and aid to promote the three areas that are priorities for the North End, which is job development, public safety, quality of life, housing and quality of life. So those three things are key and essential, and that's something that's unprecedented. We were the only city in New England to be selected for that, and it's something that will be transforming to get SWIFT finally done, to be able to bring more opportunities and more jobs. We got an Aspen grant, close to $1 million, to help disconnected youth, 16 to 24, who are not in an educational setting or a training setting. These are all the results of a lot of collaborative work that has been done. But more importantly, this is the result of experience as a mayor to be able to leverage, bring people together to get these developments and these things done.
We have just 30 seconds left, and a lot of people from the city wanted me to ask you this question. How can you do a better job of removing snow? It's really hard to drive around city streets. It's really hard to walk around. And you get up to the Hartford border, and all of a sudden, there's snow piles everywhere. People can't park. What do you do?
We're doing better. We're doing better. We redid the whole system, redid the whole route. And last winter was a much better snow removal winter. As I went around knocking doors, if there was some good feedback that I got, is that we're doing a much better job. We continue to work to do a much better job. We've shown that we're able to do it, and we'll continue to improve.
Mayor Pedro Segarra of the City of Hartford. Good to see you once again, Mayor. Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you very much.
I really appreciate it.
Pleasure to be here.
Our program is produced by Tucker Ives, along with Betsy Kaplan and Lydia Brown, Josh Nalea. Kyle Wolf is our technical producer. Heather Brandon's our digital editor. Our executive producer is Katie Filarski. This series, talking with candidates for mayor of the City of Hartford, continues on September 10th when Luke Bronin will join us. Primary election day is September 16th. You can continue this conversation online. Go to wnpr.org/where we live. I'm John Dankosky. Thanks for joining us.